Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, O'Connor and Company.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Well, it's a victorious Friday here as we made it through what I think we can all agree was one of the most harrowing, terrifying winter storms of our lifetimes yesterday. I'm glad all the schools shut down for that.
For all that snow.
It was just maddening.
Gosh.
I spoke at a luncheon with Governor Scott Walker yesterday, and we were at a golf course with this giant picture window showing a beautiful, pristine golf course outside the window. Ooh. And I thanked everyone for braving this horrific winter nightmare to get here today. And we all looked out the window and just laughed. But we get it. There were concerns, and we shut down the schools. But now we're back, and it's Friday, and we made it. And it's a big day here in the nation's capital. It's the annual March for Life, one of the most joyful days. And it's really joyful this year, Patrice, because this could be, I want to get ahead of myself, this could be the last March of Life of our lifetime with Roe v. Wade as the law of the land. That's a very real possibility. It just gives me chills.
Oh, it does too. I'm excited for today, and I've just been loving watching all the people getting ready for their for the cold weather today to head down there. God bless them.
Well, you'll love all our guests this morning too, as we are going to discuss this with a lot of people who are involved in the march today at 6:35. Father Frank Provone, Priest for Life; 7:05, Christina Bennett, Live Action News correspondent. That's a great organization giving you all the latest news on the Life Movement. 8:05, Abby Johnson. She, of course, wrote the book and film Unplanned about her life as a former Planned Parenthood director until she found out what they actually did at that place. And then at 8:35, we'll talk to our friend Henry Rogers at the Daily Caller. And, of course, that's Patrice Onwuka I've been bouncing around with here during our Friday morning intro. And it's official. Now, you know, yesterday, 1 year ago yesterday morning, we still had Donald Trump as president, right? Joe Biden was not sworn into office until noon January 20th. But here we are. January 21st, 1 year ago today, was the first morning we all woke up in a world where Joe Biden was president. Yeah, it's quite a thing to look back on and try to see what we've accomplished in the past year and, well, what maybe we can do a little bit better at 1 year into Joe Biden. Let's talk a little bit first, Patrice, about what the American people think of the Biden presidency. There's a couple of polls out that, well, they're not looking too great for good old Lunch Bucket Joe. I'll start with this one. I know you've been, the New York Post has an incredible deep dive on how the American people think of almost every category of the president's job. But I want to start with this first one because I think it's the most telling politically. As of now, only 28% of Americans, this is according to an Associated Press poll, 28% of Americans want Biden to run again in 2024. Now, you can't get only 28% of Americans to support the idea of you being president again without losing a whole lot of Democrats.
I mean, absolutely.
Usually you can count on about 33, 34, 35% of Democrats to always say yes to whatever the Democrats want them to say yes to in a poll. Only 28% of Americans want him to run again in 24. That's devastating.
It absolutely is. I mean, we know that during his press conference this week, he says he doesn't read the polls, but that's probably not true, because then he went on, as you said, to deep dive into the different types of polls and the questions. But the bigger takeaway here is that Americans 1 year in have looked at his failures in office and the crises that continue to stack up. Those that preceded him, those that he ran on saying that he could fix coronavirus, and those that have sprung up because of his policies, like rampant inflation.
Yeah. 56% of Americans disapprove of how he's doing his job overall. Only 43% approve. And by the way, let's pull that number out. 43% of Americans supposedly approve of his job as president, but only 28% of Americans actually want him to continue doing the job past 2024. So that focus is light on, well, why? I mean, if you approve of his job as the president, why did then 15% of the American people drop off and not want him to continue? And it's this. This tags off of the question that James Rosen asked at the press conference yesterday about his mental stability. Here, listen, yes. I'll remind you again, James Rosen, we had him on as a guest to talk about this yesterday morning. Here was James Rosen's questions at that press conference.
Thank you very much for this honor. James Rosen with Newsmax. I'd like to raise a delicate subject, but with utmost respect for your life accomplishments and the high office you hold. A poll released this morning by Politico Morning Consult found 49% of registered voters disagreeing with the statement, Joe Biden is mentally fit. Wow. Not even a majority of Democrats who responded strongly affirmed that statement.
Yeah, and of course, I think the follow-up question to this premise should have been, given that, shouldn't you do what your predecessor did, President Trump, and submit yourself to mental cognitive tests and have a full and open and transparent analysis of whether you are mentally able to perform the job? The day after James Rosen delivered that question and got attacked, you know, how dare you? That's an out-of-bounds question. No, no, no. It's actually something that everyone talks about. And this new latest poll, AP, dropped yesterday, the day after that press conference. 49% of all Americans think that he is not able to do his job. That's Republicans and Democrats across the board. Half of Americans right now think this man is not mentally capable of doing the job of President, Patrice.
Yet we have crickets, Larry, crickets from the mainstream media, who for the past, for the 4 years that President Trump was in office, used every tweet or every opportunity to question his mental and physical acuteness for the job. It's remarkable that now they've totally bypassing the fact that that it's a very good question whether President Biden is able to continue in office. But, you know, I'm looking a little bit lower at both of these NBC and AP polls.
Yes.
And looking at the key areas, there are three top issues that are on the tops of Americans' minds right now: the pandemic, the economy, and frankly now foreign policy because of Ukraine.
Yeah.
And in both of these polls, over half, 50%, 53% to even 60%, they disapprove of President Biden's handling of these issues. 53% disapprove of his response to the pandemic, which is really important because that was what he ran on. He was going to shut down the coronavirus, not shut down the economy. Well, unfortunately, he kind of he failed on both counts. 60% of people say that, you know, they pan his handling of the economy, which is quite a lot of that includes Democrats. So, you know, to the larger point, they have got to figure out a way to move forward. And it's not just pushing forward on the Biden agenda, which is frankly very far left, not moderate, has been, you know, pursuing policies that people don't care about, that people don't want right now. Maybe, hey, they might like it, but that's not how they're putting food on the table. That's not how they're trying to fill up their gas tank. That's not how they're worried about what's going to happen on the international scene.
Patrice, incredibly important point that we should expand on here, because let's face it, this president pretty much had this year to get done what he wanted done. Yes, I know some people think, well, he's still got a majority in the House and Senate in 22. Yeah, but it's an election year. And
yes.
And I'm sorry. I mean,
it's much more difficult.
We already saw it in the Senate, and now we're going to be seeing it in the House, too. He's not going to be able to pull together that bare majority, and is such a tight majority. His window of opportunity was the first 6, 9, maybe 12 months of his presidency, which has now expired. And he made a deliberate choice to try to push the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, AOC agenda in that first year, rather than actually doing what he kind of said he was going to do, which is just do the bare minimum to keep this country going and get us out of where we were. That's why the American people precipitously now have stopped any level of support for this president on key things, as you said, like the economy and the coronavirus. We'll get into that a little bit more and what we might expect from this presidency now 1 year down, because the sad thing is it can only get worse, frankly, unless we actually get some real opposition with some real power in Congress. And that's where November comes in. We'll get into it a little bit more in this moment. 1 year anniversary of the Biden administration. But first, it's 5:15.
The WMAL.
You know, it's funny, a year ago, the Time Magazine Person of the Year was Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I loved that, by the way. They couldn't just give it to Biden. They had to add Kamala Harris to it. But she's had a horrible year. She's even in worse shape a year later.
Than he is.
Than he is. You're so right. But contrast the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris Person of the Year 1 year ago to the cover of Time Magazine this week. You saw this, Patrice.
I did. It is. It's nice. It's criticism, though. You've got President Biden sitting behind his desk. He's got some briefing books stacked up with issues on them. Putin, Trump, 2024. Behind him, he's got a boxes of COVID-19 antigen tests, and then
that's where they all are. They're all in the Oval Office. No wonder we haven't been able to get them.
No wonder. They just need to get them out of the White House and ship them out. But there are these storm clouds that are raining on him. Now, I call this generous because the storm clouds are not raining right now, Larry. It is a tsunami brought on by, a huge tempest. He has, and there are far more issues on his plate than just what we have here. He's got inflation. He's got the southern border, rising crime. He's got the issues. They do continue to stack up. And, you'd think that time is saying, he's got a lot of things on his plate. And life is kind of raining down on his parade. But we think all he needs is an umbrella and things will be sunny again. No. Yeah. We need more than an umbrella in the White House for President Biden for him to save his agenda, or for him to save, frankly, where the country is going.
That is the problem with this artwork on the cover, because it makes it look as though all of these things have happened to him. Mm. Instead of he's caused it through his incompetency, his arrogance, and his divisive policies.
Yes.
by barely winning the presidency in a very, very extraordinary election that we've never seen occur in this country's history ever before, with a 50-50 Senate and actually losing seats in the House. So this is hardly a mandate to push through one of the most radical left-wing socialist agendas that we've had. He's been more radical this first year in his proposals than Barack Obama was in his first year, when he had 60 votes in the Senate and had 50 vote majority in the House. So to suggest that he would be doing fine if all these other outside forces weren't hurting him. No. He's actually exacerbated the problem, created these problems. The article headlined "How the Biden Administration Lost Its Way" actually gets closer to it. Here, I'll quote from it. "An administration that pledged to restore competence and normalcy seems overmatched and reactive. Ooh. Biden has been caught flat-footed by not one but two COVID-19 variants. He's repeatedly failed to close the deal with the Senate he boasted of mastering. Former chair of the Foreign Relations Committee has presided over escalating tensions with Russia and China, as well as a chaotic pullout from Afghanistan. Consequences to America's credibility abroad could be lasting." And that's absolutely true. And all of these things, again, and they touch on it. These are all the things that he claimed erroneously, and the media somehow bought, that he was an expert at. Oh, I'm a foreign policy expert. I'm an expert at legislation. I've been in the Senate all these years. I'm an expert at this. I'm a moderate. I'm going to be able to bring competency to the world. And anyone who has looked at his career over the last 40 plus years knows that all of that was a lie, but they just wanted it to be true because they had an election to win. They had Trump to defeat.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the idea that I love the irony that everyone we were told that the adults were coming back into the White House, that the people who knew how to run, who knew how to govern, were finally back in charge. And you had a man who had spent decades in public service in the Senate. He had those relationships. He could get everything done. We've seen how they failed on every count. I think it's the next paragraph is really interesting when it talks about, he's doing this in the shadow of January 6th, in the shadow of Donald Trump. Uh-huh. They don't get enough credit for their early successes, like the vaccine rollout or the relief funds, which, by the way, Federal Reserve data has demonstrated is actually driving some of the inflation we're seeing today.
All right, hold that thought. I'm sorry for it, but we got to jump in. But yes, I want to get into that what they're claiming was his one success is actually hurting the economy even more than anyone imagines. We'll get to that in a moment. And also, what might change here if Republicans can win this November? It's 5:20. Patrice, we are talking about this one-year anniversary noted on the cover of Time magazine with President Biden sitting under storm clouds at the Resolute desk in the Oval Office. You were making the point here that the one thing people give him credit for, the relief funds, it is a continuation of the relief funds that the Trump administration had already put forth, is actually causing one of the biggest problems in our economy right now.
Absolutely. So the worker shortages are driving everything from the disruptions in the supply chain just to the difficulty for, you know, your restaurants to remain open, for retailers to be out there serving their customers every day. And it's in part because so many workers were disincentivized from going to work. They were getting stimulus checks, including the one that was at the beginning of last year, generous unemployment benefits that were continued, the child tax credit that was paid out monthly beginning in July through the end of last year, and that had been increased. I believe it was almost doubled. And more people were able to get it. So you have all of these wonderful ways of providing a support to people, but people didn't need a support. I think at that point, when you have the economy reopening, you want to get people back to work.
That's right.
Not keep them at home.
It was the worst possible time for a relief package, because it was right when we were reemerging and we were getting back to work, and it stopped
exactly.
That process. On the economy, in April 21, 52% approved of his handling of the economy. August 21, 47. Mm. October 21, 40. And as of now, January 22, 38%. He went from 52% approval to 38% approval in 1 year. What can happen if Republicans win the House and the Senate? Well, yeah, they won't have the White House. It's true. But they'll be able to control the purse strings. They won't be able to give Biden everything that he wants. There will be a negotiation, and they'll have oversight. So maybe we can drag the Attorney General or the FBI in front of a House committee and ask them why they're investigating parents at school board meetings as domestic terrorists. It's 528 on WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, O'Connor and Company.
105.9 FM, getting word now that Montgomery County students are planning a walkout today to demand virtual learning. Just want to put that on your headline or your radar there, Montgomery County parents. You might want to talk to your kids before they head to class today about that. We'll give you more details as we learn them later this morning. Also, today is the March for Life this Friday in the nation's capital. And coming up, we're going to speak with 635 Father Frank Provone with Priests for Life, 705 Christina Bennett with Live Action News Network covering the march, 805 brings us Abby Johnson, that former Planned Parenthood director out of Houston who wrote the book Unplanned, turned into a great movie, too. And then at 835, Henry Rogers of Daily Carlo will join us. Patrice Onwuka, thank you for being here. I actually saw several people who were in the district yesterday arrived here for the March for Life. They're very excited about it. And I kept saying to them, well, good luck. It's going to be cold out there. Excuse me. It's going to be really cold. And they were like, oh, we love it when it's cold. Those are the best March for Life are when it's cold, because the young people, there's so many young people, so many high school students who come up for the March for Life, and they just get wacky because they do whatever it takes to make themselves warm during this thing. So it's going to be quite joyful. Expected
yes.
About 100,000 people once again to march to the Supreme Court to demand an end of Roe v. Wade. And, of course, the media will give it barely any mention at all. Every year it's one of the most joyful protests, peaceful protests. But it'll be interesting to see this year, because I said it earlier, I don't want to be too optimistic, but as they march to the Supreme Court to demand an end to Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court justices are actually in the midst of debating that very issue as we speak.
Which is huge. I mean, I don't think I would have imagined in my lifetime the possibility of seeing that decision overturned. I think the prospect is very good. And I think it's also, though, an open door to push back against, you know, the criticism, the liberals or the left who will say, oh, well, you know, what about women? What about women's lives? And I think what's interesting, and there's a fantastic piece, I believe it's in the Wall Street Journal today, written by the head knight of the Knights of Columbus, I believe his name is who wrote it. I'm pulling it up right now. But in essence, it talks about that there's more to the pro-life movement than just we want to save babies. The pro-life movement also includes things like pregnancy crisis centers. So places where pregnant moms who need resources, not just to save their baby, but who need diapers, who need clothes, who need bed sheets for their cribs, can come and find the support that they need. And these, it's almost, they're wraparound services for pregnant women, which is exactly what you might think that a Planned Parenting organization would provide, but
right.
they don't. They're just about sucking the babies out. But
That's
this
right.
is about helping women through a critical and maybe a difficult time if you don't have the support and the resources and the networks behind you. And so pro-life is a very broad movement. And I'm speaking as Patrice in my Patrice Onwuka, a citizen of the United States, and you know, just a resident of Maryland.
Yes.
But you know, it's really important that you know we continue to protect life, but also ensure that the life of the mom, that we are providing the resources and the hope that she needs too.
The rally today is going to begin at noon on the National Mall. There's a live concert. Speakers include Kirk Cameron, best known for the sitcom Growing Pains, Representative Julia Letlow of Louisiana, Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, Tony McFadden, founder of Relationships Matters, youth education program, and then Lisa Robertson of the Duck Dynasty program. Mm. Of course, there won't be any comments from our very Catholic President of the United States, Joe Biden. And speaking of this whole idea of being Catholic and being pro-abortion, as Joe Biden is actually, I'm not overstating the case, Joe Biden has the most pro-abortion agenda of any president that we've ever had. And then he wears this mantle of his Catholicism at the same time, which is not only hypocritical, but it's also scandalous because, sadly, there are a lot of Catholics in this country who have a less than astute understanding of what it is to be Catholic and what our doctrines are and what we believe. And when the most high-profile Catholic in America stands up there and says, oh, I'm very Catholic and I can still hold these positions, well, it leads people astray. It actually is false teaching to Catholics and makes Catholics think, innocently possibly, it's like, well, if Joe Biden can take these positions and support abortion like this, well, then so can I. And it's actually literally leading them to damnation. So it really raises my ire. And this group called Catholics for Choice raises my ire as well. Listen to what they did. Last night at the Basilica in D.C., the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, where they have an annual prayer vigil for life. The night before the March for Life, they do a prayer vigil. Well, these so-called pro-choice Catholics projected images on the very majestic spire in front of the Basilica promoting abortion. While people were inside the Basilica at the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception praying on behalf of the unborn, they projected these images. One of them said pro-choice Catholics, and it was the letters were within an image of the cross. So taking Christ's cross and using that to send the message of pro-abortion. And they also said this, they projected this image that said 1 in 4 abortion patients is Catholics, which is a tragedy and horrific. But those women, the 25% of abortion patients, those women who are Catholic, they need help. They need
That's
mentoring.
Right.
They need prayer. They need support.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the church in some way should be ashamed or change their position because 25% of abortion patients are Catholic is a complete misunderstanding of the truth of our faith and truth of Christianity. But I would expect no less from the so-called pro-choice Catholics.
Well, I mean, number one, what they did is sacrilegious, I would think. Number two, it's totally disrespectful to the unborn, to the church, and frankly, to the faith and people of faith. If you want to believe what you want to believe, that's your choice. How you choose to practice your faith, that is your choice. But you don't get a choice in trying to disrupt how other people practice theirs.
Yeah.
And I think what they did is distasteful and disgusting. But you know, beyond that, it's so beyond me how you know, women have used the idea of killing babies as a way to define their own power. And their ability to progress in society. And people have bought into that line that the only way you can progress as a woman and be a true feminist is by getting on board with this agenda. And I think it's wrong. I think it's so wrong.
Yeah, I think that there's and I think most women, especially a new generation of women, see through it. They see through
they
it
do.
Clearly. We've got much more to say about today's March for Life, including lots of guests on it coming up later. Right now it's 5:44. Patrice, apparently, under the radar, I didn't see this coming at all, there was some level of student loan forgiveness put through by the federal government, and I completely missed it. So I'm glad that you've brought this to our attention. Apparently, people right now, as we speak, are getting student loan forgiveness. Upwards to about 70,000 different people are getting their student. We're basically, I shouldn't say student loans forgive. We're paying for it. It's coming out of our tax dollars. I don't have a college education, but I'm paying for somebody else's college education. That's amazing.
Well, that's so giving of you. That's so generous of you, Larry. I mean, so this idea of student loan forgiveness, it's a federal program that allows you, if you have made 10 years of payments or worked for 10 years for the federal government, for in public service, public jobs, firefighters, police officers, teachers, for example, I believe it also extends to working in the nonprofit sector. If you work for 10 years, you can have your student loans, your federal student loans, forgiven. The program was only supposed to be about 22,000 borrowers, or maybe 27,000, somewhere in the 20,000s of borrowers who would qualify for this. But then it was expanded. And now, roughly, as you said, 70,000 borrowers have qualified for nearly $5 billion in relief. Now, you're going to have the left cheering, the Bernie Sanders, the AOC types cheering, saying that this is setting people free. They can, millennials can now buy houses and start families, hit those milestones. But, you know, as you've rightly said, this is not free. Someone is paying for it, and that's the taxpayer. This means that even if you are like me who has student loans, I'm still paying on my loans, and I'm paying for someone else's who's just been forgiven.
Yeah, and by the way, the picking and choosing the winners and losers here. First of all, I don't think anybody's student loan should be forgiven. No one was coerced to get these degrees. And if
it was a contract.
If you made the choice to borrow money so that you could get a degree, and it turns out that the degree you got did not get you into a profession that gives you enough money to pay off that student loan in a timely way, well, number one, you made a pretty poor choice in your life. And number two, you should be able to make sacrifices to pay off that student loan. At the very least, the last thing you should do is demand that other people who made different life choices pay for it, especially people who did. The majority of people who are going to be paying off these student loans for other people are people that don't have any student loans because they either paid it off themselves or they didn't get a college education. They made different life choices, and now they're left paying for these. And the second thing about picking winners and losers here, this is for government employees, right? This is for people, and I hate this. The changing of the language, government employees are now rephrased and called public service employees. Public service employees, which makes it sound like, oh, I'm going to sacrifice my career so that I can give to public service. I'm sorry, I've met a lot of people who work for the government, and they're great, and I honor them, and I appreciate them, but they're not doing it as some sacrifice. And public service, they saw this as their career path. And we do a hell of a lot for government employees. They get really good pensions. They get really good benefits. They get you know, there's a lot of good that goes along with working for the government. I reject the idea that we have to refer to them as public service employees. I'm sorry. That lady who makes me wait an hour and a half at the DMV is not there for the public service.
That's true, Larry. You know, what's also interesting here is who is impacted and what they do next. So this is not just about, oh, well, now I can start a family. You're looking at highly educated, high income earners who, you know, maybe they're doctors. Maybe they've worked, they have medical degrees. They've racked up debt as lawyers. They have a tremendous amount of debt. They get it paid off in 10 years, and now they can go work in the private sector. So the public service is no longer, you know, appealing to them, and they're going to go and make a lot of money while everyone else who didn't get their student loans forgiven continue to struggle. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm against student loan forgiveness. Hey, if a private lender wants to do that, and actually Navient, which is one of the largest student loans servicers, actually forgave $1.7 billion of student loan debt this week. That's great. But I have a problem if it's the federal government doing that, because that means that I, as a taxpayer, am doing that.
And if private corporations, well, listen, Bank of America and Goldman Sachs, if you want to make it part of your employment incentive, hey, come and work for us and we'll help pay off your student loan debt. Great.
Yes.
Go for it. That's your choice. Keep my tax dollars out of it. The pressure is on, though. President Biden promised to forgive $10,000 of student debt when he was running for office. He was asked about that promise yesterday, and he completely ignored the question. The pressure is on for him to do it. And I think by putting out this so-called public service employees, government employees, student loan relief, it's meant to divide us. See, the instinct for people who work in the private sector now who didn't get student loan relief is say, hey, if you do it for them, you should do it for us. That's the wrong instinct. They should have never done it for them in the first place. But he's trying to divide us so that then he ends up getting his agenda through by making Americans pitted against each other and angry at each other through envy. I'm not going to do it. We should just reject the idea that the government should be forgiving anybody's loan. Unless they want to pay off my mortgage, then we can talk. It's 5:53 on WMAL.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.